From the DMZ to the NATO front, this is CRN.
Welcome to the Lightning Round.
Welcome.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Dave Kirshner Lightning Round Podcast. I am your host. Oh boy, we are on episode 138 of the 46 Quadrennial Hunger Games. The illegitimate, fraudulently elected numbnut is still prattling around in the White House. I did a recalculation. This week is 118. We are 118 weeks into this idiot's presidency. And just yesterday, so I'm recording on Tuesday afternoon for the Wednesday posting, and just this morning, Zippy has announced that he will run again for president in 2024. Personally, I think that anybody that debates this geriatric numbskull should check and see if he's wearing an earwig. There's plenty of photos and videos out there that show that look like there was some cosmetic work coming into his ear out of his dress shirt collar. I think somebody ought to check him, make sure he's not wearing an earwig. But anyway, what else? Oh, Tucker Carlson got let go by Fox News. There's all kinds of bluster going around that it's because the Murdoch family's thinking about selling it. The Murdoch son, who is running the show, maybe didn't like paying out $700 million for a settlement in a lawsuit. But there's also rumors that somebody, a former employee that worked on Tucker's show, is suing him for a toxic work environment and sexual harassment and things of that nature. So time will tell. We'll see what shakes out. Who knows? Neither party has said anything other than we thank him for his contributions, etc., etc. So that's high level current events in the last 24 hours. But it's the preparedness show, and I've got two articles for you. One of them is kind of lengthy. All right, let's get to it. All right, so the first article is by Catherine Patterson. It was published on April 24th, which was Monday. And it's titled, "No, the Prices Will Not Drop." And she's got a valid point. As long as this idiot is still in the White House and pushing his income redistribution and wealth redistribution via, you know, climate change vehicles and you know, they've got open slavery and cobalt mines, and you know, they want us to depend solely on wind and solar and basically crash the entirety of the fossil fuel industry. That's oil and natural gas and coal and what have you. It's considerably more challenging to get groceries. I went the other day and I think I bought 8 things, and it was just, you know, it was stuff we needed. It was consumables, but those 8 things were like $60 and they used to be $35-$40. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. And I had all kinds of stuff saved up, from a large buying spree that I went on some time ago when prices were not great, but they weren't as tragic as what it is right now. And I think it was Sunday afternoon, I made a batch of homemade Italian wedding soup. You know, so I had my 1 pound of hamburger and my 1 pound of Italian sausage and an onion and, you know, bread and, you know, made little meatballs, little tiny meatballs about the size of a dime. And I made 2 pounds of tiny meatballs and I made a giant batch of Italian wedding soup. You know you're making a big batch when it tells you you need 28 cups of water. But I had all the ingredients here. So we buy the hamburger in bulk. It comes in, you know, we only buy it when it's on sale. And my wife did this the other day. She said, you know, she came in the door and I was helping her unload the groceries, and she had a 3 pound package of hamburger, and it was the sale price put it at like $11, $11.50, which nowadays is a great freaking price. And I said, well, we only need 1 pound. And she said, the 1 pound of hamburger was $8.75, or I could get 3 pounds for $11.50, because the 3 pound package was on sale. And I was like, well, all right. And I went into the cupboard and I got out my vacuum sealer and I just separated it into thirds. And I was like, that looks like about a pound, and a pound. So I took two of them and I put them into the vacuum sealer bag and kind of flattened them all out, vacuum sealed them, threw them in the freezer. Perfect. And then we used the 1 pound that we kept out and we made taco meat. But the point is, I had a couple other of these other 1 pound packages of sausage and hamburger and things like that. So I just threw it in a bowl and made my meatballs. So, but the point of her article is that, look, if you're holding out, you might want to think about it, because prices are not coming down anytime soon. And she says, consider that the average annual food cost for the American family increased by 11.4% in 2022 compared to the previous year. Yet looking back over the last 20 years, the historical level of food inflation was a mere 2%. What is happening? And more importantly, what can we do about it? Is it impossible to keep up? People just don't have the money. While some hold out the hope that prices and inflation will level out, one thing is certain, everyone is feeling the effects. How will you survive if costs continue to rise? Luckily, there are always ways to combat economic effects and prepare for the future, especially regarding food. You have a few options. What's better is that it is never too late to start preparing for tomorrow. And then she goes into a number of different ways to prepare for a changing world and an uncertain future. And the first thing she goes into is save money by cutting costs. Well, that seems pretty intuitive. But while she writes, while swapping brands to save a mere few cents may seem silly, every penny truly counts. In today's financially strapped society, you can save a buck. If you can save a buck, you should do it. Purchase products of a cheaper brand to make your coffee at home and wash your own car. Any small actions that can help you put money in the bank are essential to your success in a crisis. The next thing she talks about is cutting the cord on cable TV. If you are still paying for cable, it is time to join the rest of us in 2023. Most of the shows you watch are probably available online for free, or at least cheaper than your ever-increasing cable bill. Consider finding an alternative for television, such as an Android service, and cut the cord with your cable provider. And then that leads into cancel auto-pay subscriptions. Turning off the auto-pay feature on your monthly subscriptions and set them to manual renewal instead. This simple act forces you to acknowledge the cost and assess whether it is a product you need. I need to do this because my wife tells me all the time, you know, why are we paying this for, you know, X? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know what that is. And, you know, it's like some sort of streaming music service that neither my wife nor I use, but our daughters do. And we found that out when I canceled the subscription. They were like, hey, what happened to blah, 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 blah. So And then she goes in to reduce energy costs. And her family, much like mine, she says, is notoriously leaving lights on, falling asleep while watching TV, wasting water, turning up the heat. All of these bad habits add up. I see the additional costs reflected in our monthly bills. One of the things that we do for our energy and gas consumption is we signed up for basically what amounts to like a payment plan. So what both of these providers do is they take a look at your history and they say, okay, well, based off of your usage for the last 2 years, you say it's averages out to $80 a month. Okay, well, now it's just my wife and I. The girls are off to college and they're not here 9-10 months out of the year. So our energy costs, our water bill, our natural gas usage have all dropped precipitously. So now we're getting letters in the mail saying, you know, have you been away? Your usage has dropped to the point where we need to reevaluate what your cost should be, which is great, just saving us money. But if your kids are still young and they're still at home and they're not off to college or have moved out in some other way, one of the things that you can do is have them basically put you on a payment plan. She then moves into growing your own food, which I think that anybody that is a casual prepper is doing. I mean, if my wife went to the grocery store the other day and I wanted manwich, which is why she bought the hamburger. And then she convinced me that we should do taco meat. So whatever. But she bought a green pepper. It wasn't even an organic green pepper, but it was just a regular old green pepper. And it was $2.50. I would spend less money cultivating a green pepper plant, water costs included. Why? Save money, grow some of your own food. It's a great way to reconnect with the environment around you, the earth. You know, it'll bring a fair amount of bliss if you're working the dirt and working the soil and tending to plants. You don't have to become a horticulturist. You don't have to become a botanist. You don't have to become a commercial farmer. Simply working a trowel in a container for some, you know, patio peppers or patio tomatoes or whatever, that level of interaction can bring you some much needed respite from the world around you, the constant chaos and the white noise and everything that's going on, you know, in our country, whether it's politically or the prices or the inflation or the fuel costs or, you know, Sudanese generals fighting it out and, you know, whatever that you're in tune with, you can bring yourself a certain level of peace and fulfillment by working the dirt. It's a proven scientific study. There you go. She moves into stocking up on staples. Let's see what she says here. Well, people think of prepping, they're often put off by images of large hoard piles. While being prepared should mean you have everything you need no matter what happens, not as chaotic as it may seem. Stocking up on essential items and ensuring extra food is available is a great start. You can always think ahead, even if you're not ready to begin a full-blown stockpile in a dedicated space. When an item is on sale, consider buying an extra one or two and putting it away in a stockpile. Stock up on essential items like toilet paper, paper towels, laundry soap, and always ensure there's extra food, especially non-perishables. Then she goes into doing some DIY work. Stop hiring people and figure out how to fix things on your own. If you want to build something, figure it out. There's plenty of plans online. You can watch YouTube videos for free. So save money and do some DIY around the house. Let's see. Next, she moves into shop smart. And then she's got a couple little sub-items in here. But shopping smart means Depending on where you live, stores often offer coupons that can help you stock up and save money. Sales allow you to purchase products at a lower price. Besides sales and coupons, the brands you buy impact expenses. Always check if there's a cheaper off-brand version of a product. Let's see. She says, don't go grocery shopping hungry. Plan ahead. Avoid the outer edges and end caps in your grocery stores. Stick to the center aisles if you want to bag yourself some savings. Check discount bins. Usually they have, like in our grocery store, they have wheeled shelving units that they move around, and as people are restocking, they're pulling things off the shelf, whether they didn't sell or they're getting close to a sell-by date or whatever. And they'll put those things on there, and you'll see little discount signs. My wife checks those things constantly. She's had a few misses where she got a few things, and they were just like, that was not good. Know your sale dates. Use rewards. So our grocery store has, fuel perks and things like that. We're not driving as much. So for every X amount of dollars, you get a dollar off at, you get X amount at the pump or, whatever it was. Or you can turn around and use it to take it off of your bill. So there's something there. You should look into your rewards programs at your grocery stores. Set a strict budget. Utilize discount food apps. Shop alone, meaning don't take your kids with you. That way you stick to your budget and you stick to your list. And then price match. So similar to coupons, sales, or rewards, price matching can help you save money. If your store allows you to price match, I suggest you do. Often an item will be on sale at one store, but not at another. If you can't travel all over town, price matching guarantees you get the sale price. There are price matching apps that make it easy. So there's some good ways for you to save money because, and Catherine Patterson is correct. The prices are not going to drop. They're not coming back down anytime soon. And when they do come down, it's going to be so gradual, it's going to take years. So you're not going to see any kind of savings for probably till the middle of the next presidency, which is 4 years away. The next president takes office in a little over 559 days is the election, so that's November, December, January, so add 600 days, roughly. We're 600 days away from the next president, which, God willing, is a Republican, but it's still going to take 2 years of his presidency, or her, could be a her, I'll say their presidency, before we see any kind of quantifiable savings where prices come back down. We're still feeling the effects and the price increases associated with supply chain problems that they initiated when they shut down the planet to get rid of one guy. So there you have it. All right, let's take a quick break and I'll get to the other article. And now we pause for some shameless self-promotion. If you like post-apocalyptic, dystopian, and preparedness fiction as much as I like writing it, or you just like the show and are curious to see how creative my mind can be, then pick up my 5-part fictional series today. In a nutshell, over the course of When Rome Stumbles, Hannibal is at the gates, by the dawn's early light, colder weather, and a time for reckoning, I crash the big ag and financial industries, unleash some jihadists and an EMP, then spend 20 years trying to evade a socialist dictator. You can get all 5 parts in electronic format from my overlords at Amazon for $20. Paperback pricing is set to Amazon minimums based on page count, so I can't help you there. But for the bibliophiles out there, each part of the series averages about $15. If you don't have the time to just sit and read, you can find all 5 parts in audio format too. Audio pricing is set to Amazon minimums based on recorded finished product length. But I have freebie codes, so shoot me an email at djkpublishinghouse@gmail.com to get your freebie codes today. Don't wait. Get a copy of each part of this exciting and action-packed series today. You will not be disappointed. And now, back to the show. All right, and we're back. The second article that I wanted to cover is an article by Charles M., there was no Charles, it was just Charles. It was posted on Ask a Prepper on May 17th of 2021. So some of this might be a little outdated, but I've read through it, so I'm presenting it to you because I don't believe it is, but you may. The title of it is 12 Deadly Mistakes That Preppers Make in These Times. And it's not a short article. So I've gone through and I've kind of highlighted some key talking points for those 12 items. Item number one, and I went through and I numbered them because even though they said there's 12 of them, they didn't number them in the article. So the first one is prediction. And he says, one of the biggest mistakes that preppers make is that they think they can predict what is going to happen. You may be able to see an SHTF event coming, but witnessing global events and dealing with the specifics as they unfold in your town or on your street are two very different things. Stockpiling food for 6 months will help almost nothing if you are in an accident on your way to pick up your kid from school or your daughter is away at college. While SHTF events may be foreseen, the specific sequence of events is highly speculative at best. Your plan must rather take on the form of a statement of strategy. And he goes on to explain that a strategic statement that lays a foundation for action. A tactical plan is to have 50 pounds of rice in the basement. A strategy is to ensure that every member of the family can support themselves on the move for 72 hours while making their way to a predefined rendezvous point. Another way of looking at this is to ask the following questions. Are you preparing the road for the travelers, or are you preparing the travelers for any road that they may encounter? It's a fair point. A lot of people get that backwards. You know, I'm pushing 50, but I have been taking on a renewed interest in my own personal health. I'm watching what I eat. I'm getting more exercise. I am reevaluating how I have my various packs packed, not only for myself, but for my wife and for my children. All in an effort to make sure that I am preparing the travelers for any road that they may encounter. So we're divvying up the weight a little bit better. We're being a little more, not speculative, but we're being more conscientious about what's in each person's pack. And I've tailored the contents of each person's pack to fit the person who's carrying the pack. So, you know, one kid has a specific defined skill set that they excel at. So I put many items in there that would enhance that skill set and so on and so forth. So you get the point. Number two is Black Swan events. And Charles writes, another mistake preppers make is to underestimate Black Swan events. The name stems from the belief that Europeans had that black swans did not exist until they made their way to China, only to realize black swans are quite numerous. Since then, the term has been used to indicate events that were believed to be impossible but did occur anyway. So, a giant spy balloon flying over the continental United States, possibly carrying an EMP or a nuclear warhead to generate an EMP, outside of the realm of possibility for most people, but it's the first thing I thought of. So for them, it would be a black swan event. For me, it would be, well, that's just China being China, you know. Let's move on. All right, engage, plan. Plan has started to commence is where we'd be with that one. Number three, safety and dangers in numbers. This one was interesting. He made some pretty valid points. And what he writes is that many preppers have a roadmap for post-SHTF. This often will include concepts for who will be in their group and how large the group will be. This raises the question of how large is the ideal group? So I have a friend of mine, and we trade seeds, and we trade specific types of vegetables that grow better for her and her climate, and then she'll send me stuff that she's had success with that I want to try in my climate. But she's on a farm, and over time, her group has bought up the parcels around her homestead. So since she is centrally located within that group, the bulk of the gardening, the bulk of the crops that they're going to harvest and put into their root cellar are grown on her property, which is mostly open land. It's not a lot of timber. They reserve the timber for their various hunting pursuits in those specific seasons. But they have gardens, and they have tunnels, and they have, you know, potato buckets. They've got raised beds. They've got orchards. If anyone's going to be jealous, it's me of her and her group and what they've been able to accomplish there. But they have kept their footprint small. They don't advertise. They have regular day jobs. Some of them are stay-at-home moms. So it's nothing out of the ordinary. And you would, as a passing glance, you would not think anything of it. And they've done so on purpose, and they've been very successful with it. But if the SHTF does actually occur, she most likely is not going to have to account for the things I'm about to tell you, which is that large groups are great for defense but cannot stay under the radar and are easily found. They enjoy the benefits of economies of scale and division of labor. Small groups can stay hidden but are vulnerable. If you are alone, you are your own doctor, hairdresser, guard, cook, and the list goes on. Historically, large groups have always fared better, achieved more, and provided greater safety. Individuals are almost always more vulnerable to dangers from outside the group than inside the group. The mistake to avoid is trying to set up a group post-SHTF. Build your tribe in the good times so you know who you are facing in the tough times. And that's what she's done. And that's what I have done to some extent. But it's not like what she's got. She's rural, and you know, they have adjoining parcels and the whole bit. So number four is social cohesion. And Charles writes, another critical mistake is miscalculating what keeps groups together. You may think it's common goals or even benefits to the members of the group, but these may foster social cohesion, but they will fail in the face of a harsh pressure. And he goes on to point out that you will find people who are focused and physically prepared, but they will not be able to work together due to severe ideological differences. The mistake to avoid is to have your vision blinded by people who have similar objectives to yours. Long-term thinking dictates cohesion around shared values. And the part that I cut out there was where he kind of gave an example of the current political climate in the United States. And would you want to set up a group that included individuals from the far left? I say no, because they have proven time and time again they do not share the same values that I do at all. So why would I want them in my group if I know that that's just going to be a constant source of contention and acrimony? I don't need that. It's going to be stressful enough. I don't need, you know, some wilting daisy over there second-guessing everything I want to do because they're a vegan and animals have feelings and, you know, I should not catch that fish because it traumatizes the fish. I don't need that shit. What I need is protein, and I need people that are on the same wavelength as I am. So uber-liberals need not apply in my book. Number five, no one is coming. This one is short and sweet, and I'm not going to read every word. I'm going to read you the first sentence. One of the worst mistakes you can make is to think that someone else will save you. I don't even need to tell you the rest. But you'll find a link on the podcast page for CRN and on my website. You can go read all about it. But you should already know nobody's coming to help you. Number six, supplies will run out. I talk about this a lot. It's one of the mistakes to think you can store enough food and supplies to last you indefinitely. That is a fool's errand. I don't know anybody that would do that. But maybe there are people out there. Even if you store food for 25 years, your supplies will run out. Your strategy needs to depend on storage and production, or you will die soon after your supplies run out. Seeds are an optimal solution, but plants generally have lower nutrient densities than animal products, particularly concerning protein. Domesticated animals like sheep and cattle have a tough time surviving without humans. If you are serious about long-term survival, you will need to make provisions for animals. Yes, you need to make sure you're taking care of your animals, especially if you have guard dogs. And the last thing you want to do is go have to butcher one of your cows only to find out that they're diseased. Or butcher one of your sheep, or your goats, or your pigs, or your ducks. You don't want unhealthy animals to harvest. Concludes part six with hunting wild animals is an option, so is herding. Our forebears used to move their animals with them wherever they went. That's where you have shepherds that just move the herd. Herding. Number seven, geography is destiny. Not all places are created equal. The real estate industry has a mantra that says the three most important things to consider before you buy are location, location, location. Historians will tell you that geography is destiny. That may sound counterintuitive, but think about the following. People who live close to the sea become fishermen and seafarers. People who live in mountains don't build boats, but climb rocks and learn to breathe thin air. It would be one of the biggest mistakes to keep living in a place if that place presents less than optimal conditions for survival, a.k.a. a suburb. My personal hell. Your relationship to space will also change a lot. When there's no gas for cars, a region of 10 square miles becomes enormous. Try to settle somewhere close to water and fuel for a fire. Water has the added benefits of fish and also transportation properties. Number eight, children and old folks. This is a tough topic. But how do you incorporate, what he's talking about in this section is, how do you incorporate children and the elderly into your preparedness planning if you want to try and keep the whole enclave functioning and moving forward? You can't have children and the elderly doing nothing but eating up all of your hard-earned supplies. Whether you've produced it on your own, you went hunting for it, you grew it, you stored it. These people need to be productive. So you need to be thinking about ways to incorporate the highly experienced, but now more or less immobile in the elderly, and the highly mobile, but zero experienced children. So think beforehand about how children and old folk can contribute. Even if it's as simple as cleaning and mending. So there are some tasks. You've got firewood collection. You've got, you know, tending the fire. You've got cooking. There's a whole host of things that are not, quote unquote, physically active or physically demanding. And those are the tasks that you should likely pass along to children and the elderly. Number nine, teeth and pain is what he's titled it. And he says, there are good odds that your thinking is leaning towards storing antibiotics and pain meds. Health starts with nutrition, and nutrition starts with masticating food. In years gone by, dental health was a good indicator of life expectancy and vitality. Stock up on toothbrushes and toothpaste. Learn how to take care of your teeth when these items run out. Bad teeth will lead to malnutrition, weakness, and vulnerability. Conquering pain was one of the many main advances in medicine over the past few hundred years. Aside from stockpiling pain meds, if there is one thing you need to learn how to do, is to produce local anesthetics. So, that might be a good place to start learning how to do something. You know, broaden your skill sets. Number 10, he continues with the health vein, and this is called Nutrition and Health. And he writes, many of us make the mistake of confusing ethical considerations for sound nutritional practices. Just remember, ideology doesn't feed your body. In a post-SHTF world, doctors will be rare and they won't have the drugs to treat you with anyway. Your health will come to depend largely on your nutrition. Keep in mind that physical strength and mental acuity will give you an edge over weak and malnourished individuals. Sarcopenia is the wasting of muscle and occurs when protein intake is low and you are living with poor sources of protein. And then he gives an example, which I'm going to give to you. So many people are going to, you know, they're thinking they're going to grow their own food. Well, okay, he does a comparison between potatoes and eggs. And in a potato, you get, in 100 grams of potato, you get 77 calories and 2 grams of protein. In one large egg, you get, which is 57 grams. So in something that's roughly half as large, you get 72 calories and 7 grams of protein. You can eat eggs raw. You can consume the shell for calcium. You can eat the chicken that lays the egg. Chicken poop is fertilizer. You can easily free-range chicken, but this requires a larger area. Potatoes need cultivation and have to be cooked. You will need quite a bit of additional water to keep them going, but they can be cultivated in a small area. Eggs have much higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids, and apart from vitamin C, eggs have more of all other micronutrients. The bottom line is this. You can live better off 10 eggs per day than 2 pounds of potatoes. With potatoes, you will run out of protein and most other nutrients much sooner than eggs. Choose wisely, my friends, and don't make this mistake of thinking humans are herbivores. You got it. You need the protein. Number 11, behavior and violence. Those who study history will tell you that ancient societies had much higher levels of violence than modern societies. This holds true even when you look at death rates during peaceful times. While all preppers expect that SHTF events will be violent, some think that post-SHTF worlds will be peaceful with small bands of people going on about their lives. No, they won't! History teaches us this kind of thinking is highly mistaken. If history teaches us anything about human nature, it's that violence thrives in the absence of authority. No kidding. Just look at Chicago, or New York City, or San Francisco, or LA. They have run the cops off. They've decimated the police force numbers. They've made it as unappealing as they could possibly make it to be a police officer in one of those four cities, as an example. And now the cities are simmering cesspools of hell's outhouse. You couldn't pay me enough money to go to any one of those four cities at any time, even before all these Soros DAs got in there. Now, there are people being booked multiple times a day, and they're being released, and they go right back out and commit another crime. There is no authority in these cities, and therefore, violence thrives in the absence of authority. You had 4 days worth of riots in Chicago because there's zero authority going on over there. What did you think was going to happen? Now imagine there's zero authority nationwide. What's going to happen? It's going to get violent in a hurry. He goes on to write, the post-apocalyptic literary genre may offer some clues as to the directions in which human nature may move societies. In my opinion, he says, Lord of the Flies is one such book. Another that I would recommend is The Road by Cormac McCarthy. A sparsely populated world in which survival is tough may see humans regressing to more primitive states of being. Thinking that ethics will govern the post-SHTF world because humans are naturally benevolent will be one of the worst mistakes you can make. Benevolence is usually only directed to those inside the tribe. And then finally, his last section, he titles Final Words. So in my opinion, this is his conclusion, and it's not a deadly mistake. So technically there's 11 deadly mistakes, but now I'm being a stickler. In conclusion, he writes, A post-SHTF world will not resemble a watered-down or alternative version of what we experience currently. The cost of mistakes will be much higher, with some mistakes or errors in judgment proving fatal. Current thinking will get you killed in a post-SHTF world. Yeah. I'm coming back to the Alphabet Mafia. They want us all to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. Well, guess what? If they're sitting on a stockpile of food and they're the anti-gun crowd that I believe that they are, somebody's just going to go in and mow them down and take what they got. Because they're not going to adjust their mindset to a post-SHTF world. That's what he's saying. Current thinking will get you killed. So while you are preparing for physical survival, make sure that you are ready to calibrate your way of thinking. It will also be a mistake to think that the evils that plague society now will be better in a post-SHTF world. There you have it. That's his take on it. I didn't find a single thing in there that was worthy of an objection. It's 2 years old, and not much has changed from the COVID lockdowns that probably spawned that article to today. It's a lot to think about, folks. You're not just stockpiling supplies. You're adjusting your mindset. You're working through scenarios. If this, then that. How do I address X? And okay, well, here are some potential scenarios or black swan events that might occur, like an EMP from a Chinese spy balloon, or you know, somebody launching a missile from a cargo ship off the coast of South Carolina. Who knows what's going to happen? The financial collapse that, you know, we all think is coming is going to decimate a lot of people in this country. And you're probably going to see violence and mayhem, break-ins, robberies, carjackings, murders, rapes, theft, store robberies. You're going to see a lot of that stuff go up. It's going to go even further up than it already is when the financial system in this country collapses. All right, folks, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back on the weekend with a Jackassery episode. What am I up to on this weekend? It would be episode 139 this weekend. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. But this summer is going to be a total shit show. I can pretty much guarantee you that. So, we'll talk to you this weekend. Be good, stay safe, keep your head on a swivel. I'm out.
Happy Hunger Games! And may the odds be ever in your favor.